Hello and welcome to the Homegrown Food Summit. This is Marjorie Wildcraft, and this summit is brought to you by the user-supported global community known as the Grow Network, which is the coolest group of people on earth, people who grow their own food and make their own medicine. And how could we possibly have a Homegrown Food Summit without at least one presentation on tomatoes? I mean, tomatoes. Everybody loves growing tomatoes. It almost seems like you're not a real gardener unless you grow tomatoes. And Melissa Norris is going to be our presenter, and she's going to show you how to grow a year's worth of tomatoes for a family of four. And it's awesome. Melissa is a fifth generation homesteader who believes homegrown and mason jars should be the foundation of every kitchen. Totally with you there, Melissa, on that. She is the voice of the popular Pioneering Today podcast. She's the author of Made from Scratch Life and the founder of the Pioneering Today Academy. Now, like a lot of members of the Grow Network, Melissa had a health scare that was the big wake-up call that made her like go, oh, boom, I've got to really up my food production and up the quality of food I'm eating and nutrition. And about a decade ago, she got the cancer scare, and that really pushed them over the top. And even though they work regular jobs, they also raise all of their own organic meats, eggs, and close to 65% of their fruits and vegetables. And they do most of that in just about 2 hours a week. So you can do this too. Melissa and her family live in the rainy Pacific Northwest, which has a very short growing season. And another cool thing about Melissa's family is they've also been raising their own strain of heirloom Tar Heel green pole beans for over 100 years. Now that's a family. It's an amazing thing. So here is Melissa, and this is very, very well done. I really love how she presented really all the things that you need to know to really successfully grow tomatoes, and then especially grow tomatoes that you're going to be canning, preserving, drying, and putting up so that you can be eating tomatoes all year long.
What would it mean to you and your family if you never had to buy tomato products from the store again? That you were able to raise a year's worth of tomatoes in just one growing season to make all of your own homemade salsa, tomato sauce, stewed tomatoes, and even dehydrated tomatoes. It's a pretty amazing feeling and something that every home has the ability to do, especially when you have the tips and tricks that I'm going to be sharing with you in this presentation. So if you are interested in growing a year's worth of tomatoes, then there's a pretty good chance, I'm willing to bet, that that means you're also interested in preserving them. Because to have a year's worth of food, we are going to have to be able to have a way to make them shelf stable or to make that food last beyond when it's just on the vine. And when we're looking at our tomatoes, this is your first step, is picking the right kind of tomato to grow in the first place. So from a preserving standpoint or a cooking standpoint when it comes to tomatoes, there are many different varieties. But when it comes to making sauces, you want a paste variety of tomato. The reason we want a paste variety of tomato is because they don't have as much water, they are fleshier. That way when you go to make your salsas and you go to make your sauces, you're not having to spend as much time condensing or cooking out the liquid to get a thicker sauce. And when you are putting up a year's worth of harvest, you want to save as much time as possible. My favorite paste tomato is the San Marzano Lungo No. 2, which of course is an heirloom tomato. We grow an all heirloom garden here. Because if you were to take a plant of, say, cherry tomatoes and a plant of the San Marzano Lungos during a growing season, you're going to get more by the pound and more out of those pounds with the paste tomato. Now, I love me some good cherry tomatoes and using some other varieties, but the majority of the plants that we put in are the San Marzano Lungo or a paste tomato. There's many varieties out there. There's Romas, there's Amish paste. Everybody tends to have their favorite. San Marzano Lungo's number two happen to be mine. The other thing that you want to consider when you are picking your tomato variety to plant is, are you going to be planting determinant or interdeterminate? And we'll talk about that later in the lesson when I actually take you out into the greenhouse and we go through the growing season. But your determinate tomatoes grow to a determined size, hence the name, hence the category. Some of the benefits to that are they grow to a certain size and they set their fruit, and you get the majority of the harvest, pretty much all the harvest, right at that one time. So if you need a big, large bulk of tomatoes to can all at once, people prefer them for that. I personally prefer the indeterminate variety, which the San Marzano Lungo number 2 is an indeterminate tomato. They will keep growing and producing until the first frost. And we plant between 18 to 20 tomato plants every year, and that gives us all of the tomatoes that we need to take us through the entire year and more. So if you decide to go the determinate route, you want to make sure that you pick a variety that's a heavy producer, because typically you don't get as much harvest off of the determinate varieties as you would the indeterminate, simply because it has that longer growing period. So picking the correct variety of tomato will definitely have an outcome on you being able to grow enough to feed you for an entire year. How many tomatoes to plant for you and your family is obviously going to vary on, one, your family size, and two, how much tomato products that you consume on a regular basis. For the average family of four, 20 paste tomato plants usually provides enough tomatoes for the year. Now, I have created a special download guide that has got some different calculations that will help you out planning how many tomatoes to plant. And it's a cheat sheet, so it's got all of this information for you, so all you have to do is download it. You can grab that link at melissaknorris.com/tomatoes. Now, tomatoes are a warm weather plant, so we do need to talk about your climate, your gardening zone, your first and last average frost dates. You may already be familiar with those, but if you're not, don't worry. I'm going to walk you through it really quickly. So your gardening zone, especially if you are in the United States, simply is a map that tells you what zone you are, and that lets you know approximately how many growing days you have for warm weather crops. At least that's our focus for this presentation, is warm weather crops. Your tomato is very much a warm weather crop. It does not like to go below 50 degrees Fahrenheit for prolonged periods of time, and it does not handle any type of frost. Frost is going to kill it, and then it is done producing. It really needs those warmer temperatures in order to thrive and to grow, and then of course to produce you wonderful tomatoes. So knowing your gardening zone is going to let you know how many days you have of your warm weather growing season. For those of us like me in the Pacific Northwest, and we're up in the foothills, we're tucked up into the mountains, I have a shorter growing season. That means I have to start my tomatoes indoors under a grow light in order to start them from seed so that I can transplant out my seedlings. If I were to try to just direct sow them in the ground, I wouldn't have a long enough period of growing time at the ideal temperatures to get a very big harvest. The other thing you want to know is your first and last average frost date. You can just type that in with your zip code or your county or your address into pretty much any search engine, and it's going to tell you what that is. But from an experienced gardener, you want to check with your local gardeners. We've got Facebook, we've got social media, you can even call and ask your local county extension office, but really what we have is microclimates. So you look at the big map and it will tell you your first and last average frost date. But there can be quite a bit of variance in there. For example, if we were to drive west for approximately about an hour, there's a difference in just that hour because we're going out of the mountains and into that lower elevation towards the sea. and the coast, there's a 2-week difference on when that actual first and last average frost date falls. So in the spring, you're looking at your last average frost date. So then the soil starts to warm up and you know that you're not in danger of killing any plants that don't tolerate frost. In the fall, you're looking at your first average frost date because that's typically when that frost will come and it will wipe out those crops. So we want to be very cognizant of those dates when we are doing our planting and when we're starting our seeds and to do, especially with our tomatoes, indoors. So I highly recommend if you've got some neighbors or people in your general area and you don't know what these are for your area, that you double check with them and ask them if they've noticed any type of a difference or when that first and last average frost date is in your area from personal experience, not just what it goes by telling you on a website or on a map. It's a good indication. They're fairly reliable, but there can be some wiggle room in there. For example, it tells me that my last average frost date, so in the springtime, the last time I will get a frost, is the beginning of April. It's off by about 3 weeks where we live. So if you have a shorter growing season, then you're going to want to look at varieties within both the determinate and interdeterminate, deciding which way you want to go there. And then your paste tomatoes, you are going to want to look and pick a variety if you have that shorter growing season that comes to harvest faster. So if you're going back and forth between two varieties of paste tomato and one says it comes to harvest in 70 days and one says it comes to harvest in 85 days, having that almost that 2-week difference can actually be a big deal when it comes to your frost times. So that's how I determine it. Now, if you've obviously got a much longer warm growing season, then you can go for those longer varieties and you'll be just fine. Okay, we have picked the type of tomato that we're doing and we know when it's going to be going in the ground. And for your tomatoes, you usually wait 2 to 3 weeks after that last average frost so that the soil itself and the nighttime temperatures have came up and they're warm enough for the tomatoes to go outside. So we don't actually get a plant just like the day after that last average frost date. And in that download guide, I'll have some more details if you need a little bit more details on that if you're brand new. Next up, we need to talk about our soil. This is where if you have ever had trouble with your tomatoes, this is one of the common areas, not just necessarily with your tomatoes, but it's a common area that a lot of people don't realize the importance of that can be a cause of a lot of your issues and gardening woes. So first up, we're going to talk about our soil pH. So soil has pH and specific plants have a pH range that they really do the best and thrive in. And we want to keep the pH of our soil as close to that optimal range for those plants as possible. So for tomatoes specifically, their pH range is between 6.5 and 7.2 on the pH scale, which we know 7 is neutral. So they're slightly acidic to basically neutral, just a few points over. How do you determine what the pH of your soil is? Well, the best way to do it is to get a soil test done. Optimal time is in the fall, because when we test our soil in the fall, some types of amendments, depending upon what different deficiencies you may have in your soil, it can take, once we do the amendment, it a while for it to break down and to become available to the soil for the plants that go in to be able to absorb and take those nutrients out of it. So best time is to test in the fall so that you've got that span of the winter months and the spring for your amendments to take hold. But I have also tested in the spring when I was not so great on my planning and was still able to do some basic soil amendments and we were good to go. Lab soil testing, a lot of times a local county extension office will offer soil testing. My local county extension office does not offer soil testing, but we have an independent lab that does do soil testing in our general vicinity. You can find them online as well. A lot of universities will do it. And usually it's a pretty inexpensive cost, but it's so worth it to know exactly not just the pH level, but also the other nutrients and where those levels fall. So specifically for our tomatoes, tomatoes are a fairly heavy feeder. We need them to have a good nitrogen level. You don't want too much nitrogen because on your fruiting plants, which a tomato has a blossom that then turns into a tomato, which is technically a fruit. I know, I think of it as a vegetable too. And my kids love to argue with me that it's a vegetable. But if you have an excess of nitrogen, you'll get a lot of leafy growth, but you won't get the blossoms and as much of a harvest. So we don't want to have too much nitrogen, but we do need it for good growth. And a soil test will tell you those exact levels. One of the other things that your tomatoes really need is calcium. And we will talk about that further in depth when I take you out to the greenhouse. Because blossom end rot, which is when the end of the tomato has that icky black, it's like besides blight, blossom end rot is the other nemesis of tomatoes growers. It's a calcium deficiency. If the soil doesn't have sufficient calcium in it for the plant to absorb, then that's a problem. And a soil test will let you know what your calcium level is. But the other issue, the calcium may be present in the soil, which the soil test will tell you. But you're not watering the tomato plants correctly because they need the water in order that's through their root system to be able to draw the calcium up into the plant. So sometimes it's a soil deficiency issue. Other times it's simply a watering issue. And tomatoes, if they don't have their correct watering system, it can cause problems other than just blossom end rot. So I highly recommend that you have your soil tested. If you don't have your soil tested, you really cannot go wrong with adding some good compost and working that in. So I'm going to take you out to our off-grid greenhouse where I grow my tomatoes. And don't worry, we'll talk more about the reason behind that and why it works so effectively and other options in case you don't have an off-grid greenhouse or a high tunnel. But it's really important that I want to share with you the things that I do at planting time that have made a big difference in the overall harvest and the health of the tomatoes. And it all happens right during the planting time. But also take into consideration when you see me doing soil amendments other than the compost. I believe everybody should put compost in their tomato plants, in the hole that they're planting their tomatoes, I should say, at planting time. But the other amendments that you will see me doing have been based upon my specific soil results from my soil testing. So I want to share with you some of the ways to ensure that you get a large harvest from your tomato crop and some things that I have learned, because when I first started planting tomatoes, I did not have tomato success. In fact, it was about 3 years before I actually got a good tomato harvest. And there's a few reasons for that. One, we live in the Pacific Northwest, which is typically our summers are usually more on the cool and rainy side, though the past couple years we have had some unusual droughts for this area. So tomatoes are a little bit more finicky and they are definitely a warm weather plant. So tomatoes do not fare well with cold weather, and they also, they're a member of the nightshade family. So they are like potatoes and they can get blight, which happens for the most part is transferred to them when they get water on them, and then they get fungus, and then that ruins your tomato. So one of the best things that you can do for tomatoes is to keep them dry. So as you can see, I am standing in our off-grid greenhouse, and what this is actually is one of those makeshift like garages that you can pick up. It's a metal frame. We got it at Costco, oh heavens, like maybe 8 years ago, and it had like a canvas tarp on it. Well, the canvas ended up rotting off of it. And so, but because it's metal, we ordered, this is greenhouse plastic, and we put this up going on the third year now. So we put this up 3 years ago, and you just order fasteners, and it makes an excellent greenhouse. I like it because it's a pitched roof, so I can walk all the way through. And then you can see that wall behind me, that rolls down, and so do the sides. So if it's a really hot, sunny day, then I roll that up so that we get some ventilation going through and it doesn't get too hot. And then on it, when it's colder at night, when the temperatures are fluctuating, it's going to get really cold, and I know those tomato plants need to stay warm, then I just close that down and it traps the heat in. But the great thing is this plastic keeps the rain off of my tomatoes. And I also put my peppers in here as well.
So the one thing that we want to make sure that when we plant our tomatoes is once they have started to fruit and you've got that harvest, it's really important that it doesn't get a lot of direct rain deluge on it, because that's, you can, one, it'll start to split the skin of the tomatoes. And then it also, that's when you start to get a lot of fungus, where you can get your blight and things and disease entered into the tomatoes. So if you can do it undercover, if you've got a covered porch, or if you've got a large eave and you can put them underneath an eave, if you live in an area where you get a lot of rain. If you don't get a lot of rain in the summertime, then it's probably not something that you really need to worry about. By me putting them undercover, I really eradicated a lot of issues that I was having with the tomatoes. Your fruit blossoming plants in that family, so your, you know, your tomatoes, your peppers, your squash, your melons, all of those, they can get what they call blossom end rot. So that is where on the end of the fruit where the blossom is, as that fruit starts to develop, it can happen with zucchini, any of those things, it starts to develop like the, it'll almost be mature or about halfway through to maturity. And then on the end where the blossom is, because that blossom as it forms, that blossom, to my glasses is the blossom, that blossom will fall off. But on the end where the blossom was, it will start to rot before it's fully mature. And so you'll lose it. That's called blossom end rot. A big indication of blossom end rot is that it's not getting enough calcium. So it can be that there's not enough calcium in the soil, or that the plant's not getting the calcium because it gets the calcium up through the watering system and its root system. So tomatoes have a really large root system. They need to develop a really good root system in order to produce lots of harvest and fruit for us. My little tomato plant, so these are the ones I started in the house from seed, and he is ready to go. One of the things we want to do is we want to make sure that we plant our tomato plants really, really deep. And I want to show you why, because they have a really big root system, and here you can see the roots. But if you go up, there's little nodules on here. All of those, if they're buried in dirt, will become root, which what we want, because a really good root system means lots of tomatoes and a healthy tomato plant. So what you're going to do is we're going to dig our hole, and I've actually already put in here some of the compost in the hole. So you're going to dig your hole, and I want you to take your tomato and set it in the hole. And you can see that this sets down quite a bit deeper than the soil level here. So this is your way to gauge. So we want to make sure that it's nice and deep. Then what we're going to do is you can either break up your eggshells, or if you're going to be adding the lime, we're going to add our lime into the hole. So I'm going to put about half a cup here into the bottom of the hole, and then we're going to actually work that in to the soil. So anytime you amend your soil, don't leave it like that. It needs to be worked in. So we don't want it, we want to work it nice and into the soil. So I'm just working this down into the bottom of the dirt, because this is where the roots are going to be pulling up from, and they're going to go down into this soil. This is in the pot. You can see it's starting to become a little bit root bound. So I'm just going to lay this on its side here, and we're going to break this up a little bit, so that these roots start to spread out really quickly down into the soil. So we're gonna break those up a little bit, just kinda roll it around, set it on its side. Now, we're gonna put that down all the way in the bottom of the hole. And then we're gonna just start to backfill. A couple of things that I wanna point out here to you guys is right here, this is a leaf. I've had these, actually I transported them from my mom. She was taking care of them with the Girl Light for me when we went on vacation. Yes, your mother will be your plant babysitter sometimes too if you're a homesteader. And so these got transferred back a little bit. And so this leaf in transport, see this, it got a little bit damaged. So one of the awesome things about tomatoes is they respond well to pruning. Remove any leaf that is damaged and don't worry about it. It'll grow back. It's not going to hurt the plant. So this, we're just going to pinch it off when they're small. We're just going to remove this whole thing because it's quite damaged. It's important whenever you're removing damaged leaves from your tomato plant that you don't leave that in the soil in case it was starting to come down with some kind of disease, then it won't affect the soil. So take this and remove it far away from where your tomato plants are. Now, my soil already has compost in it. If you need to, amend it down to the bottom of the hole like we just did with the lime, and then plant it, and plant it really deep. Now, the other thing that we want to do with our tomatoes is tomatoes a lot of times need a support system because they will fall over, and we don't want all of our nice tomatoes getting on the ground. And we want to make sure that we've got lots of good airflow, because airflow helps that we don't have fungus starting to develop. And that's something like with the blight and wet that we need lots of air circulation to keep our tomatoes healthy. So one of the ways that we can do that is with support. So I'm sure you guys have all seen the tomato trellises before. Well, it's really important that you put any kind of trellis system that's going down into the ground and the dirt around the roots of the plant in when you plant, because the roots are small and I'm not going to be damaging them. This isn't going to be going through because the roots are little and just into the dirt. If I wait until this plant is really big, the roots are going to be a lot bigger and spread out, and then I'm going to be piercing and damaging the roots when I push this into the ground. So if you're going to use a trellis system that goes down into the ground, make sure you put it in right when you plant. If you don't have it, you know, within a week or so, that's fine. But you want to do it right away rather than waiting late. So we're going to put this in.
Here is my other tip. When you are planting your tomatoes at planting time, to ensure that they have enough calcium, save your eggshells. Just dry them out and then grind them up in a coffee grinder so they're a nice fine powder, and store them until planting time. I like to use about 2 tablespoons per hole per tomato plant when I'm planting my tomatoes, and when they're ground up fine like that, it's going to help it break down into the soil and for the calcium to get to the plant and into the soil that much faster than if you were to leave them large. So that's why we grind them up. The other thing we add is Epsom salt, not actually salt. Epsom salt is magnesium and a little bit of sulfate, and which is sulfur, and it's good for your plants. So
I usually do about 1 tablespoon of the Epsom salt per planting hole as well.
Now we need to talk about watering. So I'm going to show you my watering system, the one that I have finally settled on and had great results with. But we're also going to talk about watering, because watering is not just crucial to obviously the plant growing and to avoiding blossom end rot, but you're also going to see why proper watering is really important to getting your blossoms to set the fruit. So if you have ever had a tomato plant that had a ton of blossoms, but the blossoms never actually turned into tomatoes, they just turned brown and shriveled up and died, it's very frustrating. But there's a reason why, and it has to do with watering. It doesn't actually have anything to do with pollination, because your tomatoes are a self-pollinating plant. But let me show it to you in action. So back to the greenhouse we go.
So everything is going to need water. You're going to have to be watering most of your crops one way or another, using either a sprinkler or some kind of drip irrigation. The pros to a sprinkler is most people have a sprinkler and you just need a hose, you hook it up, and then there it goes. But the problem with the sprinkler is it's an overhead watering system, and that's really not the most efficient. And when it comes to things like tomatoes, things that are susceptible to fungus or blight, an overhead watering system aids to that problem and aids to the growth, because it's watering overhead, and so it's soaking that foliage. So the foliage is staying wet and it's holding in a lot of the moisture, and then that kind of causes twofold of a problem, especially with your vining out things. So think like your squash and your pumpkins that vine out. They've got those big, huge leaves. So when you do overhead watering system, those leaves, they end up collecting a lot of the water and it ends up sitting on them. And a lot of the times they'll start to get like that, the white mildewy fungus on them, white powder mildew will start to develop on that. And then the other problem is because the leaves are so big, you don't actually have the water hitting and getting down into the soil, into the root where it needs to go. So we've done sprinkling in the past. And of course with your tomatoes and stuff, that is not a good practice, because you're going to introduce, the likelihood of you introducing blight is going to be a lot more. So the best thing that I have found that has been the most effective and has also been the cheapest has been soaker hoses. So I love soaker hoses. Soaker hoses are really easy. Literally, you can have your soaker head water, your soaker hose water system laid out and going within like 10 minutes. And I like it because I can really move it. The other great thing is it doesn't use very much water. So it's very effective if you have water restrictions or if you're in drought conditions. One tip that I will give you is to make sure you do not turn your water on all the way. You just actually turn it on just a little bit until the water starts to seep out of the hose. If you turn it on full force, like you would if you were running a sprinkler, just running water, you can actually blow out your soaker hose. So don't do that. The other really great thing about the soaker hose is because it uses less water, I can let it run all night. And the reason that I like to do this is I Now there's lots of different camps. You've got two camps. You've got the people who say water at night, because then the water that you're using is not evaporating in the heat of the day. But then you've got the other people that said, well, no, because that just introduces more chance for fungus and the powdery mildew because it's wet longer, water in the early morning, but then it evaporates. So with the soaker hose, because I'm not getting the foliage wet, I will turn my soaker hose on overnight right before we go to bed, and then I'll turn it off in the morning. And then it is watered so effectively that I only have to water like twice a week. And this is actually better. It is much better. Your plants will be healthier if you water deeply a couple of times a week instead of trying to water like a little bit every night. It's much more effective and your plants will do better. And for a couple of reasons, for it to develop a strong root system, if the top of the soil starts to get dry, the plant will send those roots down further into the soil in order to find more moisture, which makes a deeper and bigger root system, which we want because that typically means a healthier plant. When we're talking about the blossom end rot, and this is with all of your fruiting plants, a lot of times it's not only because there may not be enough calcium in the soil, there could be enough calcium in the soil, but the plant gets the calcium via its root system by the water. So if you don't have water and the plant does not have enough water and it's not getting water very well, then it's having a hard time drying up that calcium, and that can be another reason that you start to get blossom end rot. So usually the two biggest culprits or the two reasons that you get blossom end rot is because of the calcium and insufficient or inefficient watering. And so here I'm going to show you, this is our soaker hose system. So what's so great about this? So you see this hose here, and the water just weeps out and then it soaks down into the ground. And this is much better than spray, because a lot of times when it sprays, if the soil's really dry, like in the middle of summer when it's really, really hot out, if you water a whole bunch, it just runs off the top surface and it doesn't soak down in deep, and it just runs to wherever the low areas are. When you use this soaker method like this, it just lightly soaks in and it really gets down deep into the plant. So I just put our tomatoes in and I just put this soaker hose down. And so I wind mine, I'll show you here, there's my basil, so I've got my companion planting in there. So I wind mine around the plants and I kind of do it in a little bit of a serpentine. You can see there, I kind of go around every other plant. So I can put it right at the base of the plant, and then it's going to soak in, and you can see it's been going, and so there's the water, and the plants are all getting watered, and then I don't have to worry about it getting this part. So you can see right there, and so I can just put that in any pattern that I want, and then over there with the baby peppers. So one of the things that's so great too about the soaker hose is you put it down, and then I've got my water. But the other thing that I want to do to really help the plants, and this is going to help with weeds, because we don't want to waste our water on the weeds and we don't want to waste our time weeding, right? So after you get your soaker hose placed, and this is just one long hose that I put in, and then at the end here you can see that's my regular garden hose, so then I can just unattach that garden hose and move it to a different section of soaker hose for the other part of the garden. But one of the great things too is we want to make sure that we're using our water very effectively and that it's getting to the plant. So after I put the soaker hose down, then I'm going to actually mulch with straw on top of the hose and around the base of the tomatoes. So that's going to help it hold, just like we did the mulch with the blueberries. What that's going to do is that's going to actually help the water that we're putting down stay in the ground. So I water even less and not as much will evaporate. So it will help with the plant as far as water loss. And again, with that blossom end rot, that's going to help with it too. The other thing is this soaker hose that I have is, I think it's 3 or 4 years old. I honestly can't remember, but I've had it a number of different seasons. And I am not even good, you guys. I didn't even roll it up and store it in the garage. I actually just left it outside and it's still performing great. So don't do that. Take better care of it than I did. But what will happen is sometimes you'll get these little tiny pinholes, and I don't think you can even hardly see that, but there's a little tiny pinhole right here. So by laying the mulch down over that, then that will help any spray that's spraying up. And it's so tiny, I'm not really worried about that. I think you can barely see it there. I'm not really worried about that hitting my tomato. But if I don't want to get any water on the foliage for those little pinholes, if you've covered that up with a mulch of straw, then that will help if you get any of the little pinholes, so that you can get at least another season or two out of the soaker hose before you replace it. Now, you could also just use some of the plumber's tape, dry that off real good wherever your pinhole is, and you'll be good to go there as well. So we're going to get just regular straw mulch on these, and that's going to help, like I said, with the water as well, and then less weeding, because we don't want to water the weeds, and we don't want the weeds stealing any of the nutrients from our tomato plants. So here, you guys, you can see we've got the straw down. So I've got that all around, and the soaker hose is down underneath. And there you can see this little baby basil just coming through. So I just put the straw pretty close and then pull it back so it has room to grow. And we've done the whole row, and then we'll add more. So this is one whole row done, and then we'll continue the rest. So you can see how that process goes.
One of the things that has made a big difference in our tomato harvest has been learning how to prune correctly. Now, hold up, because there is a whole lot of information floating around the internet world and the gardening world and controversy. Who would have thought with gardening there could be so much controversy? But let me tell you guys, it exists. That is to do with pruning your tomatoes. So I'm going to walk you through how we prune our indeterminate tomatoes and a little bit more on pruning versus variety type, determinate versus indeterminate. But really, any tomato plant is going to benefit from the first steps of pruning, and that is disease management control, and then pruning for harvest yield. So I'm going to walk you through all of that. So back out to the greenhouse we go.
The first thing that we're going to be talking about actually is pruning. So we're going to talk about pruning our tomato plants. Now, a lot of times when we think of pruning, we just think of pruning our fruit trees or pruning the raspberries or the blueberries. Tomatoes actually will benefit from pruning as well. The key thing to know when you go to prune a tomato plant is you need to know the type of tomato that you have, if it's an interdeterminate tomato or a determinate tomato. Here's the difference on what that means. So a determinate tomato means that tomato plant only grows to a set determined height. And usually those tomatoes just get to be a couple of feet tall and they do one crop of tomatoes. So they don't keep producing over a period of time. They kind of have one season where they just produce their tomato and you get your crop from it and then they're done. So you get your harvest all at once. So if it's a determinate tomato, you don't prune those kinds because you're not going to be increasing a larger harvest. It only produces a certain amount of harvest at one time. So it's the interdeterminate tomatoes that we're going to prune. So with the tomatoes and pruning, we're going to prune for a couple of different reasons. One is to, of course, increase the harvest. And the second is actually to increase the health of the plant, which then secondary will increase your harvest size. And the first thing that we're going to prune to actually is to the health of the plant. And this is going to apply to any tomato plant. And then the second, I actually prune to increase my harvest as well. Now, I have done it both ways, and I have gotten a larger harvest by pruning my tomatoes. But I always encourage people, try something in the garden and go off of what works best for you. So if you want to see, I'm one of those people that likes to see things in actions, you could prune one plant and not prune the other plant and see which one gives you the most harvest. So totally up to you, but I'm going to show you what works best for us. So here you can see is one of my lovely tomato plants. Here is the first in the row. You can see them all the way down there on the greenhouse. So one of the first things that we do with our tomato plant, and especially with pruning it for the health it is, we're going to come down to these base leaves down here, down at the base, because as you can see, now I've got my tomatoes are mulched in straw, so they're not down on the bare dirt, and I've got my soaker hose buried underneath here, so it's not getting sprayed or rained upon, which definitely helps a ton. However, some rain and stuff can blow in, because this is the tomato at the beginning of the opening. Here's the grass. So when you've got your tomato branches and leaves that are down here on the bottom level, they're down on the ground, which can have dampness, right? And as these are like little highways that travel up, and disease, especially blight, because that's from being damp and fungus, will develop first down here. So what I like to do is I like to go through and I like to remove, and how you remove them, so I'm going to follow. See, this has got a little bit of spotting, just barely, on these leaves, but it's gotten a little bit of eating. So what I do is I follow this bottom branch up to the base at the plant inside. So that's right here. Follow it up and just use your fingers here. Get that guy out of the way. Prop him up here for a minute. So we're going to take our fingers and you just pinch it off. So when they're small like this, we just pinch it off and remove it. So we're going to do this all along the bottom any of the leaves that are starting to show any kind of signs of disease. So right here is a prime example. You can see there's a little spot there, and there's yellowing, and then there's a dark spot there. This, we want to remove this right away. We don't want this to stay here and let any kind of this disease develop and travel into the rest of the plant. So we're going to go up to the base here, and we're going to pinch it off. So just use your thumbnail, and we're just going to pinch that off right there. We're going to take this out, and we're going to remove it. So I want you to go around the base of your tomato plant, and I want you to pinch off and remove any yellow or disease showing leaves, which is typically going to be at the bottom. So the next thing that we're going to do is we want to remove, and I will go ahead and remove quite a bit of this lower green foliage, because this green foliage, the plant is using a lot of its energy to keep these leaves healthy and growing. And you're not getting any of your tomato crop isn't coming from these really lower branches. Because as we travel up here, we see here's some blossoms getting ready to form. So there's blossoms, here's blossoms. And then of course, as the tomato grows up, then we've got further blossoms happening up here. And sometimes you'll have some blossoms that will start to form right here, some baby blossoms, that's in the center. But down super low down here, here's actually a little baby tomato that's starting. But see, that's not down at the very bottom level. That's at least medium height on the plant. And there's a little baby green tomato that's starting, and there were some blossoms here that didn't set. So what that means is when you've got these blossoms, they blossomed out, but they didn't form fruit. This one formed fruit. And you can probably see as this gets close, he's not really filled out quite all the way like he should be. And the reason for that, and that's what I want to talk to you about, when you see lots of blossoms happening on a tomato plant, but they're not setting fruit, meaning you're not getting tomatoes, usually the culprit for that, because your tomatoes are self-pollinating, so it's not really a pollination issue. If they're in a greenhouse and you don't have fans or any wind moving them, sometimes they just need the pollen inside of that blossom before it's open to reach it all. It just needs to be shaken. But mine are open. I've got a breezeway, and there's a breeze. You can see the breeze is actually moving it right now. That's not my issue. What my issue was, and usually what yours is, and this is especially true when tomatoes are in container plants, that is a water issue. If they're not getting adequate deep watering, the blossoms will not set fruit. And what happened with me is I didn't realize that the hose that was feeding to my soaker hose, so I've got my soaker hoses down here and they're working just fine, but the hose that went from the house, the faucet, and then coupled up and met my soaker hose collapsed, and I didn't know it had collapsed. And so for 2 weeks, my poor tomatoes went without getting hardly any water. And so that's why that poor little tomato down here, he's not very well filled out, this green guy, and then these blossoms didn't set because they weren't getting adequate water. So if you've got blossoms, you've got lots of blossoms forming and they are not creating fruit, you need to do longer and deeper watering. There's something going on with your watering and they're not getting enough water. I like to water really deep. I turn my soaker hoses on, especially when it's really hot out, about every 3 days, and I let it water overnight, so about 12 hours, because it's a trickle, to make sure it gets down really, really deep with that water. So it's better to water deep a few times a week than it is to water a little bit every night. So the second part here that we're going to do on pruning is we're going to go down and you're going to remove all of those lower ones, like I said. Next, we're going to come up and we're going to be removing what we call sucker shoots. So you're going to come to your plant, and here you can see this is a regular branch that's coming out here. When you get up to the stalk of the tomato, here's my normal branch, here's the stalk of the tomato, and then you've got in the crotch there where they meet, you've got another shoot that's coming up. Well, this is called a sucker shoot. And I'm going to just pinch this off when he's little, and we're going to remove that. So that guy is going out of there. Now, the reason is because, if we've got a plant that is supporting too much foliage, too much greenery and leaves, then it's spending a lot of energy keeping this going and growing all of this instead of growing fruit. And I want fruit. So you don't remove every single sucker shoot. There's another one right there. It's growing, but we're going to remove a portion of them. So some of your sucker shoots will come up and they will produce some more blossoms and more fruit. So usually what I'll do, and I'll especially leave it on the bottom part of the plant a little bit lower. I don't like to let sucker shoots come up on these higher ones because this is already growing quite tall. And then if it's going to produce another one, it's going to fall over more. So I will let this grow, but I won't let it continue to get sucker shoots on this. I'll let it just continue to grow up off the main part of the branch here, but not from the sides because then it's going to pull everything over. So I will come to this one here. See, this is the top here, and you can see that there's a little sucker shoot starting right here. I'm going to pinch that off because there's blossoms right above it, and I want this fruit to form and the energy going to making this tomato and not growing a sucker shoot right beneath it. So usually what I will do is I will allow kind of the same thing over here. See this? That's a sucker shoot. Right here I've got blossoms, so that guy is leading. On the midsection of the plant, because those will send up shoots and grow off here down lower. It'll send up new shoots towards the top. And those will also form blossoms and fruit. But the problem is if we've got too many of those sucker shoots going, there's not enough energy and it's not going to produce as much fruit because it's doing all of this growing in foliage. So we want it to grow some, but not too much. So I like to prune off those sucker shoots so that I get more tomato harvest. But then you can see down here where I did not get in here and prune soon enough. So see, this is a main stalk here of the tomato. This sucker shoot I'm going to remove because as we travel up, here's a sucker shoot that is grown. But you can see as this sucker shoot comes up, right here are tomato blossoms that are forming from that sucker shoot. So that's why I said I will leave a couple more towards the midsection of the plant. But I prune the ones off the top section and the very, very bottom. Again, this is same stalk right up here. I've got a sucker shoot down low and we're coming up and here is blossoms. So I will let that one go, but then I would remove this one for right now. And this actually is broken here. So remove any broken branches as well. We don't want to let them remain. So I go through and let each stalk keep 1 to 2 sucker shoots, and then I remove the rest. So if you do that, overall, you're going to have a healthier plant.
Now let's talk about staking our tomatoes, which we've talked about a little bit already, but I want to show you over the years, we have went from using the tomato cages, and we actually prefer to do a trellis system, which involves using posts. We usually use metal T-posts. They're very sturdy, but they're also easiest for us to pop up out of the ground and to use elsewhere off out of the growing season or when we're growing different crops. And we use wire between them to tie the tomatoes up. We found it more effective because as your tomatoes, once you know how to grow your tomatoes, which you have learned some very good tips, and you start applying them, you are going to get so many more tomatoes and the plants are going to be so much more vigorous that using the cages, they would just collapse. They literally would just fall over, they would bend, and they didn't work. So we had to use something that could hold the weight up, and the trellis system has just worked so much better for us. So that's what we have used for the past, I think we're going on the second or third year of doing only the trellis system. And though I am a huge fan, if you can't tell, of canning up the harvest, I also have some season extender tips for you. So if you know ahead of time that killing frost is coming, I've got some tips on what you can do to still have fresh tomatoes long past the date of your killing frost. So let's actually go back out to the greenhouse and I'm gonna share it with you. So I brought you out here into our high tunnel or off-grid greenhouse. So there is no heat whatsoever in this greenhouse. We don't use any heat in it. And at the time of this recording, we are the first week of December. Now, our killing frost this year, when it wipes out all of the tomatoes, even here in the greenhouse, was October 10th. So it's almost been a full 2 extra months. Now, when you have the killing frost, it is going to kill your plants, so you are not going to get any more new tomatoes. What you've got on the vine is all you're gonna get. But tomatoes are a wonderful thing because even though the vine may die,
The tomatoes that are still there, they will continue to ripen. So if you know that you have got a hard frost or a cold night coming, you can pull up your tomato plants. And a lot of people will hang the vines in a garage or a basement, or they'll even just pull the tomatoes off and put them in a box where they layer it with some layers of newspaper so the tomatoes are in a single layer. And they will let those tomatoes continue to ripen and can eat those several more weeks, if not months, into the winter when they can't grow it any longer outside. So tomatoes are great because you can really extend the season or extend the amount of time that you get to eat that harvest with very little effort. So here, I had already, off of these 20 tomato plants, I had already canned up an entire year's worth of our tomato crops, as I shared with you. But what I want to show you is leaving the tomato vines out here. And tomatoes are interesting because if the tomatoes are on the vine and it goes through a killing frost, it lowers the acidity level of the tomatoes to a point where they're not considered safe for canning. When we can, we already add acid to our tomatoes because they're borderline on that pH level to keep them safe. But if they go through a killing frost, now if you pick the tomatoes off the vine and just put them in your freezer to process later, their acidity level is fine. But it's when the tomatoes are on the vine and they die from a killing frost that those acidic levels are lowered. So when all of the tomatoes were killed in that frost, I left them out here in the greenhouse. And last week, so you guys, that is 7 weeks beyond the killing frost, I harvested tomatoes, ripe tomatoes off the vine out here without doing anything. Now I want to show you over the past few nights, so this is what's left, and some of these tomatoes I did not get a chance to harvest. Now I'd already preserved up a full year's worth of tomatoes, but there's a few here that they are just too far gone. This is not edible, so I can, you know, toss this into the compost pile. There's no disease on my tomato plants, so they are safe for me to compost because there is no disease on them. But you can see that the vines are totally shriveled, dead, and they are gone. So there's very few tomatoes left. There is some. These ones, this past week, we've been down to 15 to 18 degrees Fahrenheit during the nighttime. So these have been frozen really hard and then thawed. But they had reached the point to where they were already pretty well gone and I really wouldn't be consuming them anyways. But now we're getting ready to do the cleanup. Because in the greenhouse, I do a cleanup. I remove all of the old vines, all of the old vegetation. And then I can put down layers of compost. I can put in some of the manure. Right now we're doing, in the middle of winter, we do the deep litter and the chicken coop. So I won't be cleaning that out until spring. But we've got some of our cattle manure and hay that I will put in here and allow it to compost down in the soil over the winter until it comes planting time again next spring. But I really wanted to show you the full circle of doing an entire season of our tomatoes. And how having a simple off-grid greenhouse or a high tunnel like this, and even if you don't, by leaving those tomatoes on the vine, even after the tomatoes are no longer growing and those plants are dead, you can extend your crop and your harvest time by weeks and weeks and still have homegrown, delicious tomatoes to feed your family. And even though it's in the 30s right now, which is relatively cold, because the sun is coming out and we have this greenhouse plastic, it makes it a much warmer place to do your garden cleanup than if you were just out in the regular exposed air. So I'm going to get to my clean out and I'll meet you back in the house to wrap up. Okay, guys, so we'll do a quick recap there. You have all of my tips and secrets on how to grow a year's worth of tomatoes. So first tip is picking the right kind of tomato. Second tip is knowing your soil and amending it accordingly for what it's lacking. How to plant your tomato for its best health and success. Watering systems in place that not only get you fruit and keep away the dreaded blossom and rot, but also how to keep blight away. How to prune your tomatoes for optimal health and increased harvest yield. And season extenders so that you can get as much
luscious, wonderful tomatoes for as long as possible. Now, one thing we didn't talk about in depth, simply because we were running out of time, is seed saving. So because we only plant all heirloom plants, we are able to seed save every year from our tomatoes so that we can then just replant that seed that we have saved the next year. But seed saving with tomatoes is a little bit different than just pulling out the seed and letting it dry. There's a couple of tips that are going to give you a much higher germination rate and are going to make your seeds more viable. So if you go and grab the download that I've been talking about, where I've got all of this information for you, you will also get instructions and access on how to seed save your tomatoes. I want to thank you so much for joining me. If you have enjoyed this presentation and you want to learn more about how we raise all of our own food, I would invite you to follow the Pioneering Today podcast and head over to my website, melissaknorris.com/tomatoes, so that you do get that download guide. So I'll say bye for now, but the hopes that our journey together doesn't end here. Thank you so much.
Awesome, dawesome. I think the National Gardening Association did a survey and it's like 50% of all gardeners grow tomatoes. So you can join the club. And, you know, I just love that advice and all the really good stuff. Make sure you got calcium in there. You know, make sure your watering is consistent. There's lots of really great tips for growing tomatoes successfully. Melissa mentioned she had a free download for you there. I believe she's got the planting guide and how to estimate how many plants you need. And then also that it also has the information on how to save tomato seeds. Very, very useful. It's a slightly different process from what you might be used to with other seed saving. So click on the right there, on that button to the right, and you know, you'll be able to pick up that free guide. Also, you know that Pioneering Today podcast is pretty awesome. Melissa's got it going on. Really good information. I know I like podcasts because then I can be listening to MP3s while I'm out working in the garden. So click on that button to the right and that will get you in touch with Melissa. And of course, the button down below that is you can pick up the whole summit package. You can own this presentation as well as every other presentation in the summit. And we will mail you a USB and it'll get delivered to your mailbox and you can have that. And you know what? More importantly than the information is you are supporting a movement and a cause. We really are working to have homegrown food on every table. We have many, many complex problems in the world today, and most of them are solved in the garden. So this is Marjorie Wildcraft. Pick up a copy of the Summit Package, and you're participating in the Homegrown Food Summit.